On this week's episode of Marketing O'Clock,
LinkedIn has all the business bros buzzing about a new literal SponCon ad unit.
Chalk it up to conversational experience. Google Ads is rolling out their new AI-powered campaign setup tool.
All on today's show.
Welcome, you are listening to Marketing O'Clock. Just stay tuned. Digital marketing news, but let's get specific. Digital ads, SEO and analytics, social media and more. Pretty much everything that'll make your website perform. With new shows every Friday, we give you the news with sass and puns and definitely hot takes. Thank you for tuning in. You know what time it is. It's officially Marketing O'Clock. Settle in, sit back, keep it locked.
Hey there, I'm Christine Zernheld,
aka Shop, and I'm Greg Finn.
And it is officially Marketing O'Clock.
Here on January 26, 2024. And before we get into all of the digital marketing news this week, Shop, what's happening with you?
So just an update on my story from last week. I did end up attending my first NFL game in about 5 years. We lost. The Bills lost.
Bigger question.
Yes.
Do you have a new BFF that might be named Taylor Swift?
No, I didn't run into her.
Okay.
I made 5 different signs with different sayings. Then I was told I could only bring one into the game. And then I left it in the mother's room in the Pepsi Club.
Were you like running around the stadium looking at all like the popcorn machines, trying to open them up, see if she was in there?
No, I wasn't going to be a crazy person. Like I want her to live. So mean. I want her to live her life in peace. Like even if I see her, I'd be stressed out about how to approach her and not act like a total maniac. Because if I'm a fan, too much of a fan, then we can't be friends.
Okay. What were your, did you think it was a little egregious with the heart signs and everything?
Yeah, I thought I saw him blow a kiss. Okay, oh. So back up. My husband has season tickets to the game, and I've complained so many times that this man will like text me during the game and be like, what happened with that play? Like, he's literally asked me to record the replay and send it to him. And like, sir, you are there.
It's like, I'm not Dean Blandino, dude. I can't help you out.
I don't know who she is. But I realize now we had pretty good seats, 50-yard line, 300s. So you could see the whole field. The things I could not see, I thought the field goal at the end was good. Talk about embarrassing.
So were you cheering?
And I'm like, oh, it was really not good. I felt very judged. Like everyone knew I was not a football girly. So what was the original question?
Taylor. Oh, the hearts. Oh, where are the hearts too
so
much?
When he did the heart, I thought he was blowing a kiss. And I was like, ugh, showboat, yuck. It was the heart, which is cute. And I guess he did it directed at Bills fans who were booing her, which I said to everyone I passed on the way into the stadium, do not ruin this for me. Do not boo Taylor Swift. She has not been to this city since the Speak Now tour in, what, 2011? Now she's never going to come back. How embarrassing. I'm embarrassed by my comrades.
You know what? I'd have to say you telling a bunch of people in a drunken stupor in a parking lot not to boo Taylor Swift, probably not that effective.
I got terrible responses.
So do people hate you because of your sign?
Very few people saw it, except for like other mothers who went into the mother's room. It was so poetic. I lost my sign. Then you leave the game after this terrible season-ending loss, and everyone is just miserable.
I just want us to win the Super Bowl, and just losing is just, it hurts.
I feel so empty. Just sad overall.
I've never been there for a playoff game to experience that. And what does my husband and his dad do on the drive home? They listen to the local sports talk radio station for the entire hour-long drive.
No.
Just miserable.
No.
It's going to be a long day of just sulking. Laying around, probably watching replays.
No, that's the one thing you don't do.
It was
you. What you want to do is you want to listen to the opposing team after you beat them. You want to hear like
Taylor
them.
Swift,
right? But you don't listen to your like all the hate so soon.
Yeah,
you know. But it's nice when you like get a win, then you can listen to the other team. Like you know, find whatever that station is and hear them. And
that's
like,
a fun mix.
We did that. Yeah.
But now I'm thinking about all those Chiefs fans listening to Bill from Orchard Park calling in about how sad
Blow
he is.
Blow it up, the whole team.
It's terrible. Never again. Don't let me go to a playoff game again.
All right. Well, like Josh Allen said, you know, we're all still here. So there you go.
Yeah.
You got that. Do we have any sponsors this week, Shep?
We do not have a sponsor this week, but we are looking for some fantastic brands who want to sponsor the show here in 2024. We want some products that really resonate with you, our amazing audience, some tools that can really help you, and fantastic offers. So to help us with that, we set up a survey and we are asking some questions from the community about what your role is at your company, PPC, SEO, what you're into, very basic questions. It will be the easiest survey you ever take, and it will help us out so much. We would really, really appreciate it.
Shep, it sounds like you went corporate. That sounds like corporate speak. That sounds like something you see on LinkedIn, what you just said right there.
Why are you defaming me?
No, you just sound very professional. It was good.
Thank you. I try. Yeah. But we want to come up with some fantastic offers for you guys this year. So if you will please take our survey, it would mean so much to us. You can find it at survey.marketingaclock.com. We're going to send out some swag to people who fill out the survey. So be sure to include your shipping address. That is survey.marketingaclock.com. Thank you in advance. And first up in the news this week from our ads liaison, Jenny Marvin on Twitter, she posted some updates on the conversational. I almost said controversial, and it is.
Is it though? I don't think this is that controversial.
We'll see. On the conversational experience in Google Ads, the conversational experience uses generative AI and LLMs to help make campaign creation in Google Ads easier. We've been piloting it with some agencies and small businesses for several months and are ready for the next phase. So now conversational experience in Google Ads is rolling out to all advertisers globally in English in the coming weeks and is powered by Gemini, their latest
multimodal
generative AI model. So here's how it works. They say you just put in a URL and Google AI will help you, quote, create optimized search campaigns by generating relevant ad content, including creatives and keywords. And then they have like a little testimonial in here from Tom Foster. And it says, I found that conversational experience was very easy to use. It helped me create even more high quality ads with, quote, good or excellent ad strength, which has further improved the performance of my campaign.
You literally cannot know that, though. You can't know that good or excellent is improving the performance of your campaigns.
And yeah, exactly. Yes. I don't really care about my ad strength. I care about my conversion rate and my cost per acquisition.
Yes.
Like the whole article, the whole only case study they had was talking about ad strength, and I truly could not care less.
Yeah. They really push for some good reviews. And I'm happy that Tom's happy with this.
Me too. Do you think Tom is real?
He is real. Okay. I believe I know ish who he is.
Okay. And I'm sure it did improve his ad strength. I just don't really care. Sorry, Tom.
Right. Yeah. And like I can write ads too.
Yeah. And in the article, very important.
It's not like an ad like you used to have them, like an expanded text ad or something. Ads are like the bare minimum now with the number of characters. It's not that hard, frankly. Mm-hmm. It's more important like how you pin things and all that.
Right. So Google made a big deal in the article about how it can help with image extensions for your search campaigns. And it says it's designed the conversational experience to suggest images tailored to your campaign using generative AI and images from your landing pages. So they're actual AI images. They're not supposed to just be pulling them through from your landing page like some other Google features do now. I don't have super high hopes for this, but I would love if it could make some good B2B image extensions. Like that's really hard for some small businesses to come up with.
Yeah.
And if it could make great ones, that would be awesome. I will definitely look at them.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to look.
I don't either. I think if anything, if you are going to go this route, just having like really good, if you're in B2B and like B2B SaaS or something, like really good product screens of what your actual, you know, product is would be helpful. But
it's hard for SaaS though, because it can be really like small, like you don't want text on there. I feel like it is a hard challenge.
Yeah.
So if they could help people with that, I think that would be awesome. And another thing that I think would be really helpful with this, they're always talking about all these tools where you can be in the user interface, like building ads, and they're making recommendations. And what they're failing to realize is from an agency perspective, a lot of our clients want to see ads before we set them live. And you can't like build an ad in the platform and then put it in a spreadsheet. That's just like making more steps for yourself. So if they could make a tool to like export it for approval or even have that somehow in the system, that would be awesome. That's what the agencies need.
100%. And that's in-house too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's say you're you know, marketing assistant, and you write everything up and you have to get it from the director, the approval. That would be a great tool to be like, here are the ads. I'm going to send them on over. Please review them, put notes in there. Like, those are things that would be super helpful. Yeah. I'm all in. They should do that. Why don't they hire you?
Call me. So if you want to,
would you work there? They call you up. What do you say? Hey,
shop.
Everyone has a price, but
this is Jerry. I'm still in the building. I got a job for you.
I think it'd be sad. I would feel very hypocritical and fake.
Okay.
But everyone has a price. Call me. What else is happening, Greg?
I get spam message all the time, like everybody. Everybody's like, would you consider selling your house? I'm like, sure. Everything has a price. Just like joking. And I thought it would be like, I could like go back and forth. And
Realtors send you spam emails about selling your house?
Yeah, I get so many spam emails.
Must have a great, nobody's calling
text
me.
Text messages.
Oh, wow.
So I always go back and forth and just like try to have fun. But then they just called me up. I'm like, this is not what I wanted. Like, I'm like, just name a price, buddy. Like, and he's like, well, all this stuff. I'm like, oh, this was a big waste of my time.
What did you expect?
I expected that it would be fun and they'd say something and I'd just be like, add another zero, dude, and then like be done with it.
You and I have different ideas of fun.
There's a good subreddit called Scam Bait where people like, a spammer comes in and then they're like, you know, what do you do for a living? And you're like, oh, I protect the streets of Gotham at night. And I fight hardened criminals. And they're like, oh, that sounds very interesting. And it's like, you just pretend you're Batman and stuff.
I've heard some good ones. Yeah. But just saying, add another zero, loser. Got him.
It's like, I don't want to be like, no, I definitely would consider selling my house. If you said, hey, I'll buy your house for $1 million, I'd say sold.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
You know his price, scammers. Give him a call.
To answer truthfully, you know? Anyway, next up in the news, there is a new ad unit over on LinkedIn. And in the article from one of the LinkedIn employees, they say, B2B marketers, we've heard you. And I'm going to take a little 20-second time out here and just say how nice this is. Whenever, and it's Melissa Mackey, she's always on, and Julie Pacini. They're always like, any one of these Google Marketing Lives, nobody ever talks about B2B. And I just love the fact that they're like, hey, we've heard you. The new article type is a sponsored article. And it is gives you the ability to write an article and have it on LinkedIn. LinkedIn has been pushing more and more of these kind of long form content. And you can then sponsor them for awareness, engagement, and also lead generation, which is really cool.
Cool.
So the way that this looks to me is pretty similar to a lead gen ad that you would see on LinkedIn, but the kind of final output that the person who views the ad gets is their experience is just staying on LinkedIn, but getting over to that article. So there's an example up on the screen. If you're watching on YouTube at Marketing Clock, please subscribe. And it's from Autista, I believe.
Austia.
And they say, Renity, the product that revolutionized the way you work. This all like is just like perfectly LinkedIn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Are we stuck?
Like my Renity ad read earlier.
Yeah. I mean, these could even be like pharmaceuticals, you know?
Yeah.
Like, don't take Renity if you've, you know, had hard bowel
or
movements.
Or death.
And then, so you can see that the article keeps you on LinkedIn. It gives you the estimated time of the read. You can have a description, and then it says unlock the article. Users put in all their information, and then they're whisked away to the Audia, in this case, or Austia, whatever it's called, article that they can then just consume right on LinkedIn without ever leaving your page or having a download or anything like that. So this is something that I would say is definitely worth testing, especially if you're in B2B. I wouldn't probably use it for the awareness side of things. Like, that's really the last thing you want is to be on LinkedIn, to pay LinkedIn for an ad, to just send them right over to an article with keeping them on LinkedIn. I wouldn't do that aspect, but from the lead gen side of things, I think it does make sense to give it a shot and see if you can, you know, post your article up and then promote that. So they go on in the initial launch and say, why should you care? You can use the content you already have on your LinkedIn page. You can get more viral than a blog post that's hosted externally, which is a good point. You know, if you actually have a good article, you can then get more people to like and share this article, I'd imagine, on LinkedIn. So that's another benefit that I didn't think about when I first heard this. Mm-hmm. You can have all the comments from logged in members on the article directly. They say it's a better UX, but I mean, that's a you problem.
Depends on your site.
Yeah. If your site stinks, that's your fault. And then you can drive leads without sending users off LinkedIn to consult your article. So probably better than just sending people off to an article on your site, especially because of that lead gen framework there.
Yeah, so, could be a bummer for remarketing, but it's worth a test. I could see more people reading it than if they had to go off to the site. And I feel like it makes it easier for advertisers if you don't have like a CRM set up and you can't send people an email after they submit the form. This is easier.
And then the other thing is, like, depending on your industry, some people just love LinkedIn. They love it.
Yeah.
I have to get on LinkedIn. I cannot. It's
my
like,
brother's in the military and he's better at LinkedIn than me. I just found out.
Is he really?
Yeah.
He's got a lot of articles
He gets a lot, like, he gets calls from people who want him to leave and join the private sector. So he's got to be on LinkedIn.
Oh, that's cool.
It's just embarrassing for me.
Now it's time for this week's Take of the Week. This is a hashtag fire digital marketing take with extra spice served up for you. We simply deliver the take for your consumption. We give no opinions. We don't influence. You make the call.
This week's Take of the Week comes from the one and only Sam Tomlinson at Digital Sam I Am on X. Sam has a very good thread, and it's talking about something that's very important, and that is bid adjustments. And Sam, I would say, is the voice of reason within the community. And one thing that I've said it a lot, that there's not one thing that's like objectively good or objectively bad when it comes to your different campaigns. It's really like dependent, except for smart campaigns. Those just suck.
Do they still exist?
Yeah, they still exist and they suck. Oh. Those are objectively bad. But you always think of things as like a tool is something that I always think of. And for most times, you can have specialty tools and things like that. And Sam really hits the nail on the head here. He says, bid adjustments are a fantastic tool for steering Google towards your desired outcomes. But like any tool, there are contexts where they are applicable and contexts where they are not. You wouldn't use a cement mixer to fix a busted pipe. Doesn't mean the cement mixer is bad. It just means a cement mixer is not a tool compatible with the job of fixing a busted pipe. Great. And it goes on to talk about and explain in detail how bid adjustments work with each different bidding type and then the adjustment type. So he breaks down TCPA and device, TROAS and device, audience signals and smart bidding, enhanced CPC and bid adjustments, and some of the things that people make a lot of mistakes on if you're new, and talks about the fact, and he's got exact links and screenshots of all the actual help. And he kind of finishes everything saying, this is really the take of the week. And before I even give his take, a lot of these things are just not adjusted, right? Like if you have a bid adjustment on, you have target ROAS, it just doesn't adjust.
Yeah.
And so his whole point is like, a lot of people are like selling you snake oil out there and saying they bid adjust and do this, and none of it really matters because it is not applicable. Mm-hmm. So Sam finishes by saying, so if an agency, a freelancer, whatever proposal or strategy is stating that they will, quote, use geolocation modifiers, end quote, for your campaign running TCPA or TROAS, they are either A, willfully ignorant, or 2, intentionally deceptive. Both are disqualifying, so don't hire them. It's the easiest litmus test in the world. Ooh. And that's just, this is side rant here. The amount of crap that you see in other people's proposal, and just, it's like fairy dust that you see. This is a famous story, but like, a few years back, we had a client, we were doing really good, and somebody came in and said, hey, if you go with us, we're going to have a Google rep come to your location once a quarter. And they told me that. I'm like, that has never happened in the history of anything. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you can't just write that down in a proposal and then whatever. And then we had another client where they got sent the proposal from, I think it was our former client, from, and they're like, here's everything that we're going to do. And they like highlight all of these stats and things. And the absolute worst performing traffic was from their source, and they put it in an actual chart.
Why would they do that?
But everything else, the marketing of it was like, hey, you will do this. And you look at the traffic, and anybody with two neurons to rub together will look at it and say, I don't want this. But like they phrase it in this way that's like, oh, we're so dynamic and we're going to re-engage and reconnect. And they ended up signing off on it against our recommendation. So thank you, Sam.
Now it's time for this week's ICYMI.
ICYMI, people.
This is something you just might not have seen. Maybe something that you overlooked, but you shouldn't have.
ICYMI, people, from Andrew Loke at Andrew Loke on X. He said, does anyone have figured out how to get rid of draft campaigns in Google Ads? They're driving me nuts. Sometimes it's impossible to even complete the draft because of a weird error. I have this problem too. They're always right at the top. So annoying. Big PMax problem. Okay. So he replied and said that somebody found the scoop. On the overview page, there is a card with draft campaigns and it has a remove button. And he has a screenshot that it worked. So on the overview page, there's a little button at the bottom where you can remove the draft, resume the draft, or remove it. So if you have a question like that, definitely post it and ask the community, because you never know when somebody has a workaround that you don't know about. So thank you, Ali Mukadam, for that amazing tip. And thank you, Andrew, for asking.
Now it's time for this week's
pew, pew,
lightning round. At this point in the show, we split up our content into three parts: paid, organic, and social.
First up in the paid universe this week, from Andrew Hutchinson for Social Media Today, LinkedIn has announced that it's removing lookalike audiences as a targeting option, which seems like a pretty epic change for some people. The first alternative that they recommend considering is predictive audience. These enable you to essentially create a lookalike audience, they're saying, in the same way, but with fewer data sources. So instead of using your own data on your customers and finding people with similar traits, it uses information gathered from LinkedIn's lead gen forms, your contact list in the apps, and conversion data generated via the insight tag, but not your data that you've uploaded. They also recommend using audience expansion as another workaround for this, but seems, I guess, worth a test, but totally different.
I mean, that's really what audience expansion is supposed to be, right? Is looking at your audience and then making it a little bit better or a little bit wider.
I don't think I've heard great things about it on LinkedIn. Mm-mm. Tell me if I'm wrong, listeners. We have another post from Anthony Higman at Anthony Higman on X.
Higman.
Anytime there's a URL with his name in the notes, I'm just like, what now, Anthony? What now? Just gets worse every week. So he posted, quote, so everything is a call ad now. And then he has a screenshot from a Google Ads help article that says how your call assets appear. In some cases, your call assets may appear in the headline of the ad, similar to a call ad. It needs to have a biddable phone call conversion action and use smart bidding to be applicable for this, but it can happen. And I didn't know that either. Then Anthony says, but don't use call assets, use location assets. So then he has a screenshot from another help article that says, before you begin, if you want to get calls for your local business, use location assets rather than call assets. Then he says, and also the phone number we're going to show will not be the phone number of your call assets. In the same screenshot, it says, get calls. Local search ads may include an option for users to call your locations and will use the phone number of the featured business location. I'm assuming from Google Business Profile.
It's got it.
Shouldn't they say that?
Right. And then you have multiple locations. And then how do you know which is the featured business location that's pulling from? The whole point is you're running an ad and you tell people who to call.
Yep.
Like, a lot of people use phone tracking software that might be different for your Google My Business Profile or whatever the heck it's called now. That could be different than your ads so that you can delineate between leads.
Yeah.
This is just a rat's nest of trying to figure this out. Why would you make something be a call asset and then say, oh, it's going to go in your headline on the desktop? What is happening?
I'll put that in if I want to put it in.
Do you think that anybody at Google Ads knows that this is what's happening?
I would hope so, but I don't know anymore. Like, there's just so much. I guess maybe that team that got rid of call extensions didn't call the LSA team. everything is just going around in a circle. Like the it help is, center yeah. is not helpful at oh, all.
No. We talked about that last week.
Next, we have a LinkedIn post from Smarter E-Commerce. It says, mirror, mirror on the wall, which campaign type has the most fraud of all? So to try to find this out, and we're talking about Google Ads, they looked at the invalid click rate for each different campaign type. So it says the juicy part. Here are the campaign types from the most to least fraudulent, in quotes, including the median invalid click rate. Again, not all invalid clicks are broad, for what it's worth. So display has a 12% invalid click rate, app campaigns have a 10%, PMax has 7%, shopping has a 7%, and search has a 4%. So not looking so great for a display and app on the fraud standpoint. But this is a really interesting post. There's a great chart in there as always. They talk about how they got the data and what you can do with this data. So definitely check it out and make sure you're following Smarter E-Commerce on LinkedIn.
I also would have thought PMax would have been near the top.
I did too.
The only issue is there's no real way you can audit it.
Yeah.
Like at least with display ads, you can see where ads showed and all that. Like with PMax, you don't really have that option to like audit it.
So there probably is more fraud. We just don't know about it. From Barry Hot at Bing Hot. Being Hot or Bing Hot?
Bing.
I like being hot. B-I-N-G-H-O-T-T.
Well, hang on. Let me go find a thermostat.
That would be helpful.
Okay.
He said, found the option to set up free ongoing monthly or quarterly brand lift monitoring in Facebook ads. If this is available to you, it'll be in the experiments tab. And Barry says, I've run many brand lift studies and I strongly recommend them to get an additional understanding of your ad's brand impact beyond directly attributable sales. So definitely worth turning on. It doesn't seem like there's any kind of a risk here. So everyone should be checking to see if they have that.
What temperature do you keep your house?
I have an old house with terrible windows. Sometimes it's at 75.
What?
That's the max.
75.
Consistently 70.
Tables. What do you keep your temperature at in your house?
Our temperature hovers at a solid 68 degrees.
Wow.
I have old windows with ropes.
Okay.
I got to get them fixed this year. I'm working on it.
All right. I'm like 70. I like a nice even 70.
And I've got a 3-year-old who's in her changing her clothes 10 times a day, wearing shorts and a tank top in the middle of a winter phase. Mm. Next up, we have a fun segment called Oops Google from Sarah Steeman at RunnerKick on X. OMG, Google is telling on itself. Has anyone else had a trademark on an automatically created asset? LMAO. So she's looking at her report for her automatically created asset, and there is, in fact, a trademark violation.
And if you aren't following along, Google made that asset and then reported on itself.
How's it feel, Google? Good luck getting an appeal. Next up, Google moved some reports around and PPC Greg and I are kind of fighting about if it's good or not. So the Insights tab is now the Insights and Reports tab in the Google Ads interface, and it includes auction insights, the search term report, the ad scheduler report, device report, location report, stores report, landing page report, expanded landing page report, and your predefined reports. So I think this is nice because I remember learning my way around the platform back in the day and being like, oh, the search term report, better go to reports. It's not in there.
No.
The placement one is really used to be kind of hard to find. You had to go to placements, that's a lot. I think this makes more sense. PPC Greg disagrees.
So it's not who got it first.
He got it first.
Okay.
He always gets it first. But the reason I don't post more is because I'm always like, did somebody already get this? Is everything spelled right? Is everything perfect? And then by the time I post it, somebody else already has. So I checked the prep notes. It wasn't in there. Tweeted it.
It's my fault.
It's not your fault. It's my fault for not being faster. But that is it for paid. What's happening in organic?
All right. Generative AI is coming to Chrome. And for a lot of these, it's not really going to have a huge impact on marketing. There's going to be an organized similar tabs. So if you got a bunch of tabs open, there'll be a little button that you can have automatically grouped together based off the content on the page. You can make your own themes with AI. So if you're trying to customize Chrome, get a different look, you can go and change the theme. But the biggest thing that I think would be important is for not only the information you get from folks, but also to help you in your daily work, is that you can get help drafting things on the web. So Google writes, writing on the web can be daunting, especially if you want to articulate your thoughts on public spaces or forums. So next month's Chrome release will launch another experimental AI-powered feature to help you write with more confidence on the web. Whether you want to leave a well-written review for a restaurant, craft a friendly RSVP, or make a more formal inquiry about an apartment rental.
Wow.
So when you get the forms now, it's not necessarily based on the website. Like, a website could have AI help you do it, but it's Chrome that can help you fill those forms out.
Interesting.
So that's great, but you just want to know from a marketer, if this picks up more and more, maybe some of these things you're getting in or reviews might be more AI generated mm-hmm. stuff rather than like true facts.
I think it's interesting that those were all kind of positive examples when a lot of writing on the internet is very negative. Like, are they going to help Reddit trolls with their comments? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Probably not.
And that's, you know, the fear, I would say, is like that all of a sudden, Reddit's never going to be like that because they're, you know, freaks. But like, you just don't want like everybody's thoughts to be AI.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, you don't want every single comment on Search Engine Roundtable to be written by Chrome. That's not going to be helpful.
Never. No. Would never happen.
Okay. And by way of Glenn Gabe and Reuters, there are new dedicated units as Google is planning to tweak search results to give comparison websites more prominence to comply with new EU tech rules, including a new unit of links for such websites. And the quote says, "We'll introduce dedicated units that give a group of links to comparison sites from across the web and query shortcuts at the top of the search page to help people refine their search, including by focusing results just on comparison sites." The actual law that goes into effect on March 7th in the EU states that Google is obligated to treat rival services and products the same way it treats its own when it ranks them in the search results. I think this is great. You know, I think that seems fair. Mm-hmm. If you want to use Google, you can use it. If you want to use some of these other comparison sites, great, do that. Like, I do think if you just shoehorn somebody into one solution and one solution only, you see what happens. It gets, you know, it becomes shittier. Sorry, tables. Okay. And there is another article over on Search Engine Roundtable from the incredibly fast talker, Barry Schwartz. Poll. 60% of SEOs are worried about the impact of Google SGE. Apparently, about 30% are not worried about Google SGE, and the rest are just not sure yet.
Maybe worried isn't the right word, but everyone should be caring.
I agree. I am not worried. I mean, I'm not an SEO, to right. be fair, like pulling the curtain back. Because people at Brighton are like, oh, you're not. I'm like, no. No, I understand this stuff, and I get it, and it's not that hard to follow along with it, and I do SEO, but I'm not like, you know.
You don't identify as
I one. Don't identify. No, I don't identify at all.
On our survey, marketingclock.com, you would not pick SEO.
I would not pick SEO. But if you're like worried about, like, it still highlights content. Now there's citations. I still think this current iteration of SGE is not overly helpful for users. I think it will direct. I think this whole experiment of like, we're just going to keep people on Google is going to massively backfire. We're seeing it more and more with things like people not even using Google as their first option and using TikTok. I think you just have to keep getting and spreading users to the web. Like, I just think that's the case. So mm-hmm. No, I'm not worried about it. And actually, I'm excited about it, if anything. You look at all the results and it's very, very standard results for a lot of queries. Product-based queries, you know what you're going to see when you do a search. It's going to be like category pages, like software stuff. You're going to be like main product pages of the homepage. It's nice to see lists and ultimate guides and how-tos and videos and things come into SGE. And I would look at that as an opportunity. And it's the opportunity of making more content when everybody else is spinning around with ChatGPT making a bunch of garbage. It's like your turn to thrive. I'm excited. I'm the 30%.
Great. Okay. Okay. So the options were excited or worried or not sure yet.
Okay. Worried or not worried or not sure yet.
Yeah. See, that's why it was hard.
Well, the other thing that I really am really disappointed with Barry in on this, there was no chart. There was no graph. There's
How
nothing.
Are you going to make a poll without a pie chart?
He won a pie chart of the year last year, and he easily could have done this.
That is
this
so
year.
Disappointing.
I know. For more Google AI news, they're introducing Aspire, a framework that enhances the selective prediction capabilities of large language models, enabling them to output an answer paired with a confidence score. And I actually love this. I feel like people are really hating a lot of time on these hallucinations from AI. And you'll see, like, you ask a question and it'll be like totally wrong. And why wouldn't you have like a confidence level with it?
Mm-hmm.
And be like, who is Shep's favorite artist? And you could be like, Britney Spears, 1% confidence level. And then you can like take a look at that and not just be like, oh, they got it wrong. You'd be like, they're not very confident in this. And in one of the examples, they're talking about what vitamins assist in blood clotting. And like the answer was vitamin K or something like that, but they gave vitamin C, but there was like really low confidence. So I just thought this is really cool. That's smart. Love to see more of this. And honestly, I would love to see it, like, this technology rolled out to weather people. You know what I mean? People are like, oh, it's going to rain today. And I want to know what your confidence level is.
You wouldn't watch anyway. Last week, Greg was halfway to the Buffalo office. I texted him. I said, don't come here. All the roads are closed.
I'm like, really? I look at like the throughway cams and you were right. Like there's no way it would have taken me probably 4 hours to get to the office.
Yeah.
But.
So if they had the confidence level in their reporting, maybe you'd watch more?
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's the thing. Everybody just has to give an answer on weather. You can't just come out there and be like, what's it going to look like tonight, Shep? You know what I mean? You can't just do that. You got to give an answer. And sometimes people don't know what the answer is. And then they can't even put like 50% in there because then people are going to stop watching this stupid station.
Yeah.
I want confidence answers. So I'm all about this. I think they should aspire to be like Aspire.
And you should be rated retroactively. This is a good poll calls in this actually.
Yes. Yes.
There should be stats for the weather reporters.
Yes.
That we can keep track of.
Yeah. Just like a sports, like accuracy stats.
Yes.
And then they have like a QBR, but it's like a MBR or something like that. Meteorologist rankings.
That would be really nice.
You know what? You're right though. Probably still wouldn't watch. I have a window in my house. All right. And next up, Google is dropping thousands of search quality raters in latest cuts. They're canceling their Appen contract. And if you recall last week, we were talking about the fact that there was a study from Germany that some of the results were getting worse. The quality raters are humans that go and rate websites based off of a set of specific criteria that you can see if you want to look it up online. And this contract with Appen is one of the largest sources of third-party human search quality raters that Google has. They say that they got no prior notice, adding that the reason that Google did this was part of a strategic review process for its global inbound service contract with Appen. The projects will stop as of March 19th, 2024. Also, the amount that they were paying, I didn't write it down in the notes, but it seemed pretty ridiculous. In fiscal year 2023, Appen's revenue from Google was $82.8 million at a gross margin of 26%.
Wow.
So they profited $2 million off of this contract. And again, I don't know if you got Appen stock, but guess what?
Sell it.
It ain't happening after this.
It ain't gonna happen.
And then Barry Schwartz also followed up and said, Google told me these quality rater jobs from Appen will be moved to other suppliers. Google does not seem to be replacing these jobs with AI. So that is good. That's a kind of update to the story. As a Google confirmed a search ranking bug where sites disappeared from the search results only over this weekend. They said, we're aware of a very narrow issue that caused temporary fluctuations in search results for a small number of websites. Furthermore, according to this article, Barry Schwartz says that the issue seems to have impacted sites that were on exotic vanity top-level domains. Some of the affected TLDs included .club, .consulting, .life, and other non-standard TLDs. All right, Google search snippet has been seen with a chat with a live agent showing. There's a search for Samsung, and you can jump right into a chat with a live agent. It says, right in your site links there. And Barry says that this is in the local pack and local panels before, but he hasn't seen it as an actual search result snippet. So look out for that. There's also a little bit of back and forth as whether or not Google's paywalled and subscription structure data model is leaky or not. Ryan, according to Barry Schwartz, Ryan Single, a journalist covering tech business, tech policy, civil liberty, and privacy issues, who's written at The Wired and many other respected publications, posted a comment right there in Search Engine Roundtable, and Ryan had called the solution leaky. I'll just grab one sentence from what he said. You can go check it out, searchengineroundtable.com. He says, it'd be great if it fixed that instead of sending Danny Sullivan out to lecture sites about their markup with directions that don't work for a smart, modern, non-leaky publishing system. Basically saying that Google can see the content and then puts the content out whether you like it or not, and it leaks out. Danny responded and said, I mentioned paywall and gated content in my tweet, not as some type of lecture, but guidance, because it's something any publisher doing gated content might want to understand. Gated content isn't something that our crawler can see unless publishers let us in. If they do, we can better understand the full content they have. In turn, that might help us surface their content for relevant queries. There is nothing leaky about this. That seems to be a suggestion that if someone lets us in, anyone could get in. That's not the case. We can be specifically allowed in. If someone is concerned that makes cache content available, they can also block us showing cache content. This is all documented and hasn't changed for ages. All right, in Web 1.0 news, Bing is testing bubble-style search bar menu and bullets for site links. According to Search Engine Roundtable, Microsoft is testing two new changes to the Bing search interface. One is bubble style for the search bar, and the other is using bullets for the site links and the search result snippets. I think this looks so corny. Barry has a picture of Search Engine Roundtable. All the site links have a little bullet. I don't even know why these are called bullets. Why are little dots called bullets?
Because like a bullet is round?
No, that's like not a bullet. Bullets are like made to shoot in like a spiral. That's a ball. That's like a musket ball.
You'd have to go way back to find the answer to that question.
I'm calling these musket balls. So if you look at the example, there's Search Engine Roundtable, and then you can see like Archives has a musket ball on the side, Keyword Research. I don't know. I think this looks cheesy. This looks horrific.
What would you like more?
I don't know. Put a little design in there or something.
You like the little...
Tildes? Yeah. Yeah, give me those.
That would be cute.
Yeah. All right. And lastly, YouTube says thumbnail A-B testing option is coming soon. If you recall, this was tested in like June of last year for certain creators, and then they're like, it's coming soon. Well, they put another video out and they said thumbnail testing is still in testing. As of late last year, the testing ramped up to 50,000 channels of various types, sizes, and regions across YouTube, and it'll continue until the team feels like the product is delivering what it needs for creators.
I don't like this.
Thumbnail testing?
Yeah.
Why?
Tapes is already putting me in a lot of compromising positions in our thumbnails.
Don't you want to be in more compromising positions?
He's given more opportunities to put some object in my hand. I don't know if I like it.
Tapes, you have my permission when this rolls out to put a thumbnail that's the normal one and then a completely ridiculous one of me. And we'll see what happens. We'll do ridiculous.
The ones up already aren't completely ridiculous.
We'll make it more ridiculous. But at this point, this is like a George R. R. Martin like novel. Like, is this ever going to come out? How hard is this to get done? This is like A-B
testing.
It really
seems like a basic thing, yeah.
You're supposed to be this tech giant that can do anything. We're supposed to believe in all of your AI and Aspire and Gemini and Lambda, everything, whatever. You can't make an A-B testing tool? It's wild. It's taken a year.
That is crazy.
Okay, and in reality, lastly here in organic, in Nope News, Amazon wants you to start paying for Alexa. Do you use Alexa?
No.
Tables. Nope. Do you use Alexa?
I do not.
I configured my house to be like Alexa friendly. And it at first was really good. I don't know what's happened. She might have CTE, Alexa. It works so much worse than it ever did. Like, I'll wake up and it'll start like rattling the news off. And I'm like, Alexa, stop doing this. You need to stop this. I think today, overseas, there was a train crash where 50 people died.
And
I'm like, I don't want this. I don't want any of this. Yeah. I just want an alarm.
That's crazy.
Set an alarm.
I think that would also be dangerous with little kids in your house that they're just going to buy things from Amazon all day. You got a lot of trust.
Yeah, I mean, they get in trouble, but they just say, hey, Alexa, play Fart Man 5000 or something like that. And it just plays like this, the world's worst song. And this comes by way of Business Insider, probably the least reliable source on the internet. And the new service is tentatively called Alexa Plus and has a launch date set for June 30th. It seems that the deadline will be hard to meet, and Amazon is testing the underlying technology dorkily named Remarkable Alexa.
Oh, God. That's probably why your other one is breaking, because they want you to buy the new one.
Yeah.
It'll probably work like the old one.
Yeah, I have Unmarkable Alexa. But no, I'm not paying for that. That's a you problem, Amazon. Figure out ways to make money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be that hard. Like, even if I tell the thing, like, hey, I want, can you play White Noise? It'll be like, yes, you can subscribe for this for $20. It's like, no, play White Noise.
That's really stupid.
Like, I just don't want to buy your products again. I don't know. Like, I feel like they've figured it out with TVs. If you buy like a Fire TV, it's so full of Amazon products that like you have to like to be like, here's Reacher. Do you like Reacher? Yes or no? Oh, no? Well, here's more Reacher. And then they just like push their own Prime.
I didn't realize you were all in Amazon Home now. You used to be all in Google. Yeah.
No, I'm on Blink, which is an Amazon company.
Wow.
I'm on an Amazon TV. I'm just like, I was on Google. Good thing I got off that, because we know what's happening with Assistant there.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I'm all Amazon TV, Amazon everything. And it's maybe a bad choice. Maybe I just need Apple. At least they care about some of their products.
You have gone through such a change.
I know.
Brands,
who am I?
Brand loyalty.
I'm a basic boy, Shep. All right. On to social. We're going to head over to our social reporter, me. Yes, us. And there was a tweet from Mr. Beast at Mr. Beast on X. We talked about the fact last week that he was going to put one of his videos up on X, and he was a little bit dubious about how much money he could make there. The first video they put on X, again, this is not an exclusive video. It was already out on YouTube. This is just repurposed. Made over $250,000, $263,000 to be exact.
Wow.
And he said, but it's a bit of a facade. Advertisers saw the attention it was getting and bought ads on my video, I think, and thus my revenue per view is probably higher than what you'd experience. And then in true Mr. Beast fashion, he followed that tweet up and said, I'm going to give 10 random people that repost this and follow me $25,000.
How does he? I get that he's rich, but it's just astounding.
And then he says, that's the $250,000 my X video made. I'll pick the winners in 72 hours.
Wow.
So he made the money and just giving it away. But like we talked about before, there seems to be a real push for Elon to get more content onto his site. We talked about it with like Jim Rome, Tucker Carlson, who's seen your videos, correct?
Apparently.
Right. Didn't he make a comment about your TikToks?
He didn't like that I send my kids to daycare.
No, okay. I mean, that's probably a good thing.
Sorry, Tuck.
But he's got all these content creators and trying to get more people to come and share the content on X. So, and again, he can do what he wants. He doesn't have to worry about the next quarter stock price.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something there.
Next up in social from Social Media Today, TikTok is testing 30-minute uploads as it looks to expand its content options. I love it. I know you're going to love it.
This might be the best thing that's ever happened to TikTok.
I want the TV app.
I get on TikTok. First off, I'm going to try to pass new legislation to stop having part one and part twos. I know I complain about it all the time. 30 minutes. Great. Give me longer form stuff. People want long form stuff.
You see them more than other people because you're talking about them or something.
I swear to God, I want to see Anatoly go dress up as a gym cleaner. Everybody thinks he's weak, and he walks in the gym, and then he goes to pick up the barbell, and it's like, next part two. And I can't find part two. I don't know how people find things on TikTok.
It's really an exclusive problem to you. I think that you're in like a part two hole. They just know it's driving you nuts.
Yeah. Somebody is, it's like the Truman Show, and it's me on TikTok.
I don't get a lot of part twos, but I think this will be a great change. Again, I want the TV app.
All right. Next up, and this should have launched with the release news, Threads is close to launching post drafts. That's it. That's the story.
Okay. TikTok's Chinese sister app is experimenting with generative AI search to help users maximize discover on both inside and outside of the app. Discovery, probably. Quote, the answers not only come from high quality videos within the app, but also include information from third party websites with provided links for users to view more details and explanations. Additionally, based on user queries, AI search can suggest related questions that users may find interesting. So people think that because they're testing this in China, it could be coming to TikTok here as well. They need a better search in general. I saw Heather Monahan on a TikTok last week.
Our content writer here.
Yes, she had a bomb tweet about Josh Allen being undefeated. It aged poorly, but being undefeated since he appeared in an ad with Peppa Pig.
And the Bills stole that. Did you see that?
The Bills stole it. But this NFL guy who respects Taylor Swift, who I follow, don't remember his name, he posted a video with Heather's tweet and was talking about it, not the Bills. Mm. But then I told her about it and I couldn't find it. Their search is terrible. So yeah. Maybe this one will be better.
Okay, X is launching audio and video calls on Android. This already happened on iOS back in October, but if you would like to, you can make a call with a direct connection via your X DMs. You need to be a paying user as it is only for X premium subscribers.
Meta is launching a new creator management tool within its business suite, which will provide more ways for agencies to manage their talent across Meta's app. So this is for agencies managing influencers. And it has tools like permission management, access management, revenue linking. You can import existing connections, meaning you can migrate existing shared assets from Business Manager into creator management tools. You can also terminate ongoing relationships and have earning insights.
Okay, and from LinkedIn, there's a lot of new careers-based updates. So there's sort of three main changes. First off, LinkedIn is rolling up job collections, and it will categorize open roles into different sectors and settings. So you can kind of, there's a little swipeable tab that you can see and choose if you're looking for machine learning and AI or fashion, whatever you want there. And it just has a recent list of those collections. You can also have new job preferences filter that will allow you to set specific parameters and elements that you're most interested in. This will only be visible to recruiters. So you can put in things like job alerts, pay if you're open to work, and then you know you'll be able to match. And if you find a job, those things will be highlighted if it matches some of those preferences. And then lastly, you can now flag your interest in a specific job. You used to be able to express interest in a specific company. Now, if there's a job, you don't have to just go apply or try to save it. You can be like, I'm interested in it, and I'm sure that you can go find it when you want to.
And in more important news, I guess Ousty has the Jasper's Market of LinkedIn. I didn't know. Ooh, who knew?
Love that.
Social round. It's where everything's happening. TikTok has a new tool that will generate AI songs for your videos. So you provide text prompts for the lyrics, and then it will turn your song into one of three genres right now. You can pick pop, EDM, or hip hop. And boy, are they bad. Did you watch the video?
No, I didn't.
It was like a creator on TikTok writing a song about creating a song for TikTok. Oh. But it was rough. It was like the songs I write for my kids.
We should make a new theme song.
I was thinking that, actually.
So what would you pick? Pop, EDM, or hip hop?
For our show, yeah. I guess pop.
I think we do EDM. We just drop the beat, right?
No.
Come in, no.
What would you call our current theme song?
Pop.
Yeah. I guess this is also a great time for the disclaimer. There's been some more questions lately. Greg Finn is not singing our theme song.
Yeah, it's not me.
It's Everyone somebody, thinks it is.
No, we paid somebody on Cameo to do it.
That's it for the social round. That was easy. It was fun.
Now it's time for this week's WTH.
Misguided.
I hated all of that.
I'm like, who does that?
Get rid of it.
Where we rant, rave, and roll our eyes about a trending digital marketing topic.
What are we coming to?
Honestly, see what had us asking.
WTH
this week.
And in WTH this week, there was a big post over on Y Combinator. And it was talking about a software engineer director at this point who was at Google for about 19 years and they were stepping down. And the comments just kind of turned into like a water cooler meeting of Googlers and ex-Googlers. So take this with a grain of salt. I cannot confirm or deny anything that I'm going to say is alleged. I do not know if they worked here or not. They say they do, most of these people, or had worked at Google at one point. But a lot of people were just kind of talking about the massive culture change of being like, hey, do 20% of whatever you want, like do, you know, moonshots and stuff like that, to, hey, we now just care about revenue. So somebody named Deccan said, Sundar is not a psychopath. You're making a common error, ascribing humanity to Sundar. Sundar is a growth robot with no moral system. Oh, see Brian Cottrell's description of Larry Ellison. You need to think of Larry Ellison the way you think of a lawnmower. You don't anthropomorphize your lawnmower. The lawnmower just mows the lawn. If you stick your hand in there and it'll chop it off in the end, you don't think, oh, the lawnmower hates me. The lawnmower doesn't give a heck about you. Lawnmower can't hate you. Don't anthropomorphize. Did I get that better?
Anthropomorphize?
I'm so bad at those.
I can't talk.
Don't anthropomorphize the lawnmower. Leave all this in, by the way. Don't fall into that trap about Oracle. And that was an example of that. And then he says, whoa, the difference is that Sundar is an industrial scale trash compactor, not a lawnmower.
Oh my God.
Okay, and then there was another response that they said, throw away for obvious reasons. The comparison to Oracle is pretty good. Working on Sundar's Google feels like working for a company whose only product is quarterly earnings reports. I have no idea what the company's mission is anymore besides number go up. The old descriptions of Google's creative, disruptive, academic culture seem very foreign at this point. Our raw materials are the brains of new comp sci graduates, and our product is money. Very interesting. If you're like this kind of stuff, yeah, things are not well.
Yeah.
And that brings us to our real life segment, straight out of our accounts and into your ear holes. It's time for Working Hard or Hardly Working, where we talk about what's going on in our IRL work, good, bad, or otherwise.
I really don't even know if I want to jinx this and say it out loud, but I think that I'm going to get an account opted out of the Microsoft Audience Network expansion for search and shopping campaigns.
I think you might too.
I'm close. I had to jump through hoops, receipts, proof, timeline, screenshots, everything. Heather Gay style. You need a rep. You need to spend a lot of money. I think it's possible. And I have learned so much about how to segment different reports to see the real audience network spend. It's not what you think it is. They really make you jump through hoops. So I'm hoping to make a tutorial for our YouTube channel once I have it all figured out, but it's a jungle.
All right. And I just did an experiment. I think you need to test. I think if you're not testing and you're an ads professional, you are doing your clients a disservice, your company a disservice, and yourself a disservice. I tested the world's dumbest broad match campaign. Usually with broad match, we try to have like a bunch of really targeted terms. So at least, you know, we're not saying it's a microphone. We're saying it's a professional desktop microphone or, you know, hi-fi microphone or something like that. I just had a broad match test with some really dumb stuff in there, very low budget, and it is working bananas. It's
but it was
amazing.
Target ROAS, right?
Yes. I would never use broad match without being target CPA or target ROAS.
We've said never a lot.
Yes, as of right now, January 26, 2024, I will never do that. But yeah, it could change on the 27th. Who knows?
So I feel like that's the biggest thing that you need to make it work. It's like a real smart bid strategy. But
yes, target ROAS, make it aggressive. Target CPA, make it aggressively low. Like, but I just was like so surprised and happy.
I'm happy for you.
And now for this week's
Cool Tool.
As a reminder, our Cool Tool segment is not an official endorsement or paid mention. We're simply sharing something we found in our travels that may be of use to our listeners. And is really, really cool.
This week's Cool Tool is a plugin to keep your site chugging.
Wow.
Jess?
Is that Jess over there?
Let me know what you think of that one. This is courtesy of the WordPress Core Performance Team. They released two plugins, both have the goal of speeding up web pages. And this comes from an article for Search Engine Journal from Martini Buster, Roger Monty. So thank you, Roger, for sharing this. So the first plugin is Auto Sizes for Lazy Loaded Images. This pauses the loading of non-critical images to improve page loading time. And then the second one is Speculation Rules. This one's kind of cool. They essentially predict that a page will be requested by the user and will begin pre-rendering the web page before the user clicks that link. So again, both of these, the goal is to speed up your website. And I guess this team from WordPress releases these plugins and they're kind of testing things for WordPress. So this is an opportunity for you to use it and be ahead of the game, see if it can help performance on your site. And as always, we'll have the link in our newsletter as well as on Discord. So head over to newsletter.andcommunity.marketingaclock.com respectively. Pick your poison and check it out, as some would say.
Now it's time for our must-read marketing article of the week. An article so advanced, so in-depth, so detailed that we simply cannot cover it in its entirety on today's show.
This week's must-read marketing article of the week comes from Simo Ahava in Simo Ahava's blog. The title is called Consent Mode V2 for Google Tags. And if you aren't that familiar with consent mode, Google Tags, what it is, why you need it, Simo has maybe the best resource I've ever seen on it. It talks about what consent mode does, what's new, advanced versus basic, the Google Tag Manager's consent settings, do you have to use consent mode in 2024, what if consent mode isn't implemented by March 2024, does anything change from a data protection perspective, how do you check if it's active, some of the signals, which tags are most relevant, the manual configuration. It is just the go-to for consent mode. If you have any issues with this or want to learn more, head on over to simoahava.com. Thank you, Simo.
And now on to our playlist of curated songs to work to. You can head over to playlist.marketingaclock.com to listen to Marketing a Playlist. Greg, what will you be adding this week?
I've got Say Goodbye by Future Islands.
And I will be adding Is It Over Now by Taylor Swift, which I'm now realizing is a really sad choice about the Bills season.
I have the answer for that. It is.
All right, that does it for today's show.
It is now officially not Marketing O'Clock.
Thanks for listening.
We miss you already.
And we can't wait to see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Marketing O'Clock. If you're looking for more information on today's topic, head over to marketingaclock.com/newsletter to receive every single article we covered. We share the news as it breaks in our Discord community. Head over to community.marketingaclock.com to join.
Welcome to this week's Shoot in the Heck. We're after our famous Friday news show. We don't talk about marketing anymore. We just...
Shoot the heck.
I have no idea what we're doing today. Greg, will you fill me in?
Well, Shep, you laud yourself on being like a 70s girly, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Right? I like the disco.
You know the 70s. I like to boogie. I feel like you sort of belong from the 70s.
Wow, what a compliment.
Thank you. So we're going to play a new game here. It's called... Is this a real 70s band or did ChatGPT make it up? Okay. All right. There's no strategy behind it. I just have some that are real, some that are fake. You have to decide if it's ChatGPT or a real band.
I only really like disco music, so this is going to be tough for me. Okay. I don't know about like classic rock, really.
Okay. Well, first band, Z.
How do you spell it?
Just the letter Z.
I'm going to say fake.
Correct. Okay. That is a ChatGPT original. I said make a band with a one letter name.
I just think my husband's family would have known about that one.
Okay, next up, Velvet Groove Revival.
Oh, wow.
Velvet Groove.
Too good to be true. Fake.
You got me again. You're too smart to be beaten by a machine.
That is here. An excellent name, though.
Okay, you're 2-0 here. All right. So next up, we have Harmonix, H-A-R-M-O-N-I-X, Harmonix.
I'm going to say real.
Fake.
Oh, are they all fake?
I'm not telling you.
That's you also have to make a good a decision. Name.
Okay, next up, band name, Phantoms Divine Comedy.
Fake.
Real. In 1974, this lot released the debut album Phantoms Divine Comedy Part 1, and it sparked rumors that Jim Morrison was actually fronting a new mysterious band, yet he had died 3 years earlier.
So it's just like hippie music?
I've never quite gotten into Phantom's Divine Comedy personally, but I'm going to start right after this podcast.
We'll have to add it to marketing a playlist.
Okay, next up we have Edison Lighthouse.
Fake.
Real.
What?
While this particular band was an actual one-hit wonder with the single Love Grows, Where My Rosemary Goes.
Oh, I know that one.
Leader Tony Burrows was a musical busybody, recording simultaneously with numerous bands that churned out a plethora of top 20 hits.
And what was the name again?
Edison Lighthouse.
It's probably like a real thing.
Okay, next up we have Third World War.
Ooh.
Third World War.
I feel like too good to be true fake.
It's real. In the early 70s, the British band were regarded by some as the first to combine the skills of proto-metal with the aggression of punk. Their two albums, 1971's self-titled debut and 72's Third World War II, bristled with an agitating left-wing lyricism and brutally exposed riffs.
Wow. I bet Jess Budd has heard of them.
Okay. You really,
sounds dark.
You really got to pick it up here. You are 2 out of 6. Okay. Started hot. Not so much anymore.
Okay.
Okay, next up we have the band M. The letter M.
As opposed to Z.
Correct.
I'm going to say that one's real.
That is real. Okay. It is a 80s sonic precursor. M introduced its signature sound to the world with pop music, a catchy synth-heavy single that went number one in the final weeks of the 70s.
What's one of their songs?
Pop music.
Oh, it's called pop music?
Yeah. Is it the songs like pop, pop, pop music? Right?
Oh!
I don't know if that's it or not, but M is real. Okay, next up we have Night Sun.
How do you spell night and how do you spell sun?
N-I-G-H-T and S-U-N. Two very good questions, by the way.
Okay. I feel like that's real.
You would be correct. They are a German band who were very much on the heavier end of the prog metal spectrum. Night Sun only got to make a single album, 1972's Morning.
What is prog metal? Is the Night Sun the disco ball?
I don't know. I do not know. Okay, next up we have the Analog Dreamers.
Ooh.
Analog Dreamers.
Too good. It's fake.
You're correct.
Okay.
You are correct. All right, you are now taking the lead here. And you have to get
There's
this.
No one against me.
Well, you're playing against AI.
Okay, okay.
If you lose this, the computers win.
Okay.
Okay?
It's like solitaire.
Yes. And the last one is, this is all one word, Zephyr Rhythm.
Ooh.
Zephyr Rhythm.
How do you spell Zephyr?
Zephyrhythm.
Wait, Rhythm, right?
Right, but the R at the end of Zephyr goes
oh.
into rhythm.
Oh.
Zephyr.
Real.
Yhythm.
None of the other ChatGPT ones have been that unique.
You're incorrect. Oh. You tied the machines. It is 5-4. And unfortunately, I don't have a tiebreaker, but actually, I had one before. Let me go back and find my previous version. Okay, now we're into the overtime. The band name in question. This is for everything. 5-5. You need this to win.
Okay.
Jinbei. G-I-N-B-A-E. Jinbei.
Can you use it in a sentence?
No. Yes, I can. Jinbei was a band from the 70s.
Okay.
Is that good enough for you?
What's the country of origin?
No clue.
Fake!
That's real. Unfortunately, Jinbei was from Yokohama in Japan.
See, you could have told me the country of origin.
Legacy is an astonishing 1976 self-titled 5-song album, Jinbei.
You set me up for failure.
You were supposed to protect us from the robot, Shep, and we all lost. Okay. We all lost.
Well, I hope we'll all still be here next week, and you can join us then. Thanks for listening.
You know what time it is. It's officially marketing o'clock. Settle in, sit back, keep